Thanks, Ian, and thanks for the opportunity of speaking today. Desalination is one of those technologies that evokes passions, and I'm not quite sure why, but more often than not, there's a pejorative term put in front of the word desalination. In Victoria, it's called the controversial desalination plant. In New South Wales, they refer to it as the regrettable desalination plant. And I'm going to talk about some of the social aspects of water later on, which I think might explain a few of those things. But the way Sue and I are going to work this afternoon is I'm going to give you the big picture overview about what's happening in with desalination around Australia, and quickly go through the issues. And then Sue will get up and go into all of those issues in much more detail using Perth as a case study. Well, but before I start my presentation, there was an excerpt from the New York Times in the Fin Review a week or so ago, which said that 2008 was when Mother Nature and Father Greed hit the wall at once. This is now called the Great Disruption. Now, the great disruption for the urban water industry has been happening for over a decade now. It's just that we call it climate change. The narrative of the urban water industry has been the scramble to adapt to a drying climate with measures on both the supply and the demand side, but doing this in a sustainable manner. What this has resulted in is a $30 billion investment plan just in new water sources alone, not to mention wastewater investment or stormwater investment or even renewables in the water supply system. $30 billion on new sources of water. And the urban water industry currently is second only to the mining industry in terms of our investment in the Australian economy in capital expenditure. And the way the mining industry is going, we might surpass them soon, who knows. But this sum gives you a picture of the enormity and the magnitude of the capital works program that climate change has forced on the industry. So I just wanted to... This is going to drive me mad, I think. I just wanted to give you an idea. These are the storage levels as of earlier this week. And you can see the cities where there's no room for complacency is Adelaide, Melbourne, and Perth, of course. Adelaide is misleading. There's 60%. That's 60% of a very small storage system they've got over there. And in the dry years, like we've experienced over the last decade or so, they rely on about 80% of their water from the Murray River. So, and we all know what's happening to inflows in the Murray River. This was rainfall in 2008, and as you see, the green areas and where most of the population live, the rainfall is relatively low. Up the top end of the country, where there's not that many people at all, it really has been wet, and that was exemplified for what happened in February, when the bottom half of Australia was on fire and the top half was wading through floods. I think this has got a... So I just wanted to quickly show you what the drivers were. This is inflows to Melbourne since 1997. You can see that they're down to 65%. You've all seen these before. This is Canberra's, once again. You'll notice 2006 was a grim year. Adelaide's again. Anyway, there's Sydney's. Hey, can you drive this? Otherwise, I'm going to throw this somewhere where you won't like it. So that's Perth. Next one, and this is Brisbane's for southeast Queensland. And you can see how can you ever plan for water supply with a chart like that. Next, and so you can see there that why good share market investors, past performance is no guarantee of future performance. That's why we've moved away from the historical record for planning for our water supply systems. What it demonstrates is that dams are an extremely unreliable source of water in an era of climate change. So the broader context for what's happening is, as I said, the yields have collapsed. I don't need to say that again. We've got rapidly growing populations and also changing demographics. The fastest Household sector growth in Australia is in single-person households, and you lose your economy of scale, both in energy and water, so that makes conservation targets even harder to meet. We've all got to do our bit for the perilous state of our rivers, making sure that we're topping them up with some environmental flows. We live in a community that has much higher expectation than our mothers and our grandmothers and fathers, and really this is code for saying, you know, ongoing harsh restrictions won't be acceptable going forward. And of course we've got to meet all of the above in a sustainable manner, and this really is the great challenge for our era. And it's often said it would be the ultimate in irony if the response to the water shortages in Australia was for the urban water industry to increase its greenhouse footprint, given that surface runoff really is the first casualty of climate change, and the water industry is the first industry to be impacted by climate change. Next one. And just quickly, this just shows population growth, and you see Melbourne grew by the largest of all the capital cities in 2006-07. Next one. And going out to 2050, you can see that Melbourne's going to be a shy under 5.9, and given that these figures are generally conservative, I think you could round that off to 6 million. Next one. And so the responses have been on both the demand and the supply side. Too often critics say that the industry is just concentrating on desalination as a panacea or the silver bullet, but in actual fact, they never mention the extensive water conservation programs which have led to a social revolution around Australia in terms of attitudes to water and the way water is used. And also the fact that we are in, like good share investors again, we're diversifying our portfolio. Up until recently, we were virtually totally reliant on dams for water, and now we're developing desalination, recycled water, groundwater, interconnecting different basins, all as a response. And I'm not going to go through what all those responses are there, but you can see them. But the bottom line is in an era of climate change, you can't rule out any option. Next one. And this is an overview of desalination in Australia. Sue is the only person who can claim to have an operating desalination plant in her city, but you can see Sydney's plant is well underway, and if you're sitting on the right-hand side flying into land at Sydney Airport over Botany Bay, you get a beautiful view of it. And you can see the capacity of it, 90, but it does have capacity to be scaled up, and this is part of the risk management approach, or the, you know, using real options analysis just in case we get a biblical event and the reservoir do start spilling, that we do this in a gradual, responsible way. But you can see by the time all this investment is finished in around 2011, there's going to be about 620,000 megalitres of water or capacity. And this represents about 44% of the capital city water consumption. And I think once the first raft in 430 represents about 70% of Melbourne's annual consumption last year. I think I'm right in saying that, Bruce Rhodes. Next one. And this is just a quick shot of Sydney's desalination plant from the air, and also the racks of membranes that are going in there. Next one. And the thing to remember about these new sources of water is that the original sources of water, like Melbourne's, where you've got catchments, dams perched up in the hill, you can use gravity to convey it down into the city, apart from the 10% or so that goes through Winnicky, the rest of it gets a dusting of chlorine and it's into the supply system, and gravity is a beautiful thing when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions, and you can see why that's such a low level. But as you ramp up the level of treatment, whether it be recycled water or desalinated, the energy requirements do increase. Next one. There's also support for desalination at the Commonwealth level, with a number of funding programs available for cities and towns wanting to develop desalination. And two centres of excellence will be set up in Australia, one in desalination, which is going to be held established in Perth, and the other one on water recycling, which will be established in Queensland. Next one. And overall, the advantages of desalination are that it is a highly reliable source of water. And this is the great virtue of it. You can bank it in, you know, at the start of the season and knowing you, and you know you're going to get a, unlike rainfall and runoff, you never know where you're going to be. It has a relatively small footprint compared to dams and some other options. Jim Gill often used to refer to it as just being a Bunnings store. Well, it's a little bit bigger than that, but you sort of get a warehouse. It's a proven technology right around the world, around the Mediterranean and the Middle East, and in Perth even. And the thing is, it does allow our storages to recover, and we could sure do with a bit of that in Melbourne, given that we're down at 30%. And unlike recycled water, it can be put back into the supply directly without incurring significant energy required to pump it around to reservoirs or environmental buffers inland. Next one. The environmental impacts, Sue will go through these in relation to the Perth plant, but it's really getting the seawater out of the ocean, the discharge of the concentrated salt brine, the disposal of waste biosolids, and I think the most significant one, particularly in Australia, is the greenhouse gas emissions. Overseas, this hasn't been the case. They've been more concerned about the other things, and I think that this really reflects the political potency of climate change in Australia, which personally I think is reflecting people's concern about water, that when people express their concern about climate change, more often than not, they're expressing their concerns about water, because water shortages and water issues are the most tangible and visible manifestation that our climate has changed. Next one, please. And all of the desalination plants that are underway now or have been built, we've given the community a guarantee that they will be fueled or powered by renewable energy, and it's been mainly wind farms. Sue's got a wind farm in the west, and if you're travelling between Canberra and Sydney, just out near Lake George, you'll see 67 gorgeous, beautiful, graceful wind turbines being erected there that will supply the power to, or offset the power that could be consumed by Sydney's desalination plant. Compare that to, you know, what a coal plant looks like. Next one. But I just wanted to, you know, in terms of energy breakdown, I just really wanted to get, you know, the whole energy use into, you know, perspective. For sure, they use more energy desalination plants compared to original sources, but let's have a look at it in a bit of a context. This is some recent work we did with the CSIRO and energy, but I put this up just to show how energy intensive water pumping is. If you look at Sydney on the left and Adelaide on the right, the white colour there is the pumping, the energy consumed in pumping, and really you don't need to pump water that far, particularly uphill, before desalination from an energy point of view, you know, starts to become attractive. And you see Melbourne from an energy point of view is very efficient thanks to our water supply system and thanks to gravity. Next one. And this just shows you the energy used by the water utilities, and you can see that the that's dominated by coal fire electricity there, with the exception of Melbourne, where the lime green bit is the 70%, or the energy generated down at Werribee treatment plant, which makes it 70% self-sufficient, and the other horizontal green in Perth is Sue's wind farm there, which is powering the desalination plant, and I think the rest are self-explanatory. Next one. But bear in mind that the total energy use for water and wastewater services of the six cities was 7.1 megajoules per annum, but this you can see this only represents 0.2% of the total energy use in an urban society. So you can see it. Now this is not an excuse for us not to do anything, but it does put it into perspective, and you can see how the energy use in each of the cities relates to water consumption in that chart below. Next one. But if you're looking for the real hanging fruit in terms of energy and the energy water nexus, go no further than your local hot water system in your house, because residential hot water heating consumes on average 1.3 of the total energy used in cities, or 27% of average household electricity. And residential hot water uses on average 6.5 times the energy that is used by the utilities to supply you with both water and wastewater services. And to put it another way, if you can reduce the amount of hot water consumed in households by 20% by either getting rid of your electricity big tank storage and replacing it with solar or gas, or you reduce the volume of water by shorter showers, water efficient washing machines, you can wipe out completely the greenhouse gas footprint of the urban water industry. Next one. And this just shows you that we haven't been asleep at the wheel in terms of recycled water. It's grown by 119% since the turn of the century. And we're just producing just over 160 gigalitres a year. And that's pretty much the combined household water use in Brisbane, Adelaide and Geelong. So that just puts that volume into some kind of magnitude. Next one. And really, just to get back to where I started, it's not all about desalination. We're pulling all of the levers at once because you need to, because it's such a complex environment that we're operating in at the moment. And I just wanted to finish off by talking a little bit about the social aspects of water and really how this relates to desalination. That water really is the quintessential social, economic and political commodity, and it's pretty unique, and it invokes passions that you don't see people getting fired up about when it comes to electrons or gas molecules for that point of view. And this all gets back to, I think, the necessity for life, but I think there is a perception out there that water is seen as a natural resource, whereas electricity is probably seen as an industrial product. And this is why I think the energy saving ethos is not as great as what it is when it comes to water saving. And I think that the community see desalination as being an industrial process, which it is, of course. And this is why they don't like it, because they think that water being a natural product should be taken from reservoirs and streams and the like. So finally, just in conclusion, desalination is not the panacea. You've got to evaluate all your options at your disposals. And I've got to say that we're continually surprised on the downside with the implications of climate change, as exemplified by the summer we've had in Melbourne, by the bushfires and by the flooding up north. And cities like Canberra are now where the CSIRO predicted them in terms of rainfall and runoff to be where they predict in 2070. So the climate, the rate at which climate has really impacted on our industry has been nothing short of terrifying. And the community now, I think, understands that there's certainly no climate change skeptics in the urban water industry. And we're very, very busy in the business of adaptation. And of course, one of those adaptation strategies is desalination. So thank you for your time.